Welcome to the PrevMed Health Podcast with Dr. Brewer, your go-to source for heart attack and stroke prevention. And I am your host, Ford Brewer. Each week, we dive deep into the latest trends, expert insights, and practical tips to help you decrease your risk of heart attack and stroke. We discuss plaque reversal, insulin resistance, prediabetes, diabetes, cholesterol, supplements, medications, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and have this journey to a long and healthy life together.
When was the last time your doctor mentioned homocysteine to you? We do look for it. It's a known metabolic marker. In fact, homocysteine takes you down a long metabolic path. It has to do with things like methylation. That probably rings a bell for a lot of you. But it also has to do with things like oxidation, inflammation, and even things like N-acetylcysteine, N-A-C, or GLYNAC. For those of you who are listening who have heard any of those things and you're starting to think, well, yeah, I've heard of that. One of the things we're going to do today is try to connect all of those dots for you. And again, what we're talking about is some metabolic information that's very important. It is very, very much associated with inflammation, oxidation, the things that cause early death, heart attack, stroke, blindness, kidney disease, erectile dysfunction. So these are very important things, but again, they're not the sort of thing that your doctor usually mentions to you. When somebody comes in to see a doctor, usually the doctor looks at, quote, bad cholesterol, LDL, and tries to give you a statin. Our metabolism is so much more deep, intricate. It can be confusing, but again, if you start looking at some of these hidden things, like the ones we're going to be talking about today, homocysteine, it doesn't take that much to learn what's going on and to start developing a whole new way of managing your metabolism. And if you manage your metabolism, you're managing your health. Again, another thing that we get too much of in medicine today is treating the disease after the damage is done. There's an old Chinese proverb that, and I'm going to butcher this, but it goes something like a good doctor deals with symptoms or deals with injuries. A better doctor begins to deal with symptoms to prevent the injury, but the best doctor prevents injury and symptoms altogether. And that's where we're trying to lead folks. We're trying to say, okay, recognize, this is true prevention. Recognize problems that happen with your metabolism and begin to correct those long before you have any symptoms, long before you have any damage to your tissues. And that's the way to get beyond this current norm where you hit your 60s and you know what? You could just die from a heart attack. You could be one of those 50% of people who discover that they have a problem leading to heart disease by sudden death. And that's just not the way to go. That's not what we want. That's not necessary. So Jesus wants to come on, but not yet, Jesus. I just wanted to mention a couple of other things. When we measure, I'm just going to go through briefly what we talk about with patients when we do see a high homocysteine and what it has to do with methylation. So when you have a homocysteine over 10, there's a very good likelihood that you're what we call a poor methylator. Those of you who've spent a lot of time on YouTube have heard that term. So it gets a little, we have to go just a little bit down a couple of bunny holes. One bunny hole will take us to your local car garage where he's talking about rust, oxidation. Rust is oxidation where you're combining metals, usually iron related metals, with oxygen. Another place where you see oxidation is, you know, with Boy Scouts, and they call that fire. In your high school or college chemistry class, they call it oxidation. And in our body, Yes, it's oxidation, but you can think inflammation. You hear inflammation, think oxidation. Impure, incorrect, inadequate burning of fuels in most cases, or which can happen, obviously the most common cause of it is prediabetes and diabetes. Your immune system, when it begins to attack something, creates some inadequate or inappropriate burning of fuel as well. So inflammation is very, very much associated with oxidation. Now, go back to high school chemistry class. How do you fix that? Well, you just add hydrogen. And again, you get down to the molecule level, and two hydrogen plus that oxygen makes what? Water, H2O. So it becomes inert. Now, that's not exactly how the human body neutralizes oxidation. The human body uses a thing called a methyl group, and you'd have to know just a little bit about organic chemistry. But again, that's where this term poor methylator comes from. You see, the human body uses methyl groups to neutralize oxidation. And you may remember and think about another thing when you're thinking about oxidation and inflammation. You remember the vast majority of times that you hear about taking vitamins or taking supplements, it's for what? Antioxidants. The classic antioxidants are vitamins A, C, and E. And those have become a major portion, if not the biggest portion, of the supplements industry. Well, there's something that you need to know. You're missing the key part here, and that is, you're not using the body's own method of antioxidation or reduction. You're just using the vitamin itself. Whereas if you help the body with methyl groups, resupply those methyl groups, then that's how you're doing this physiologically, naturally, letting the body use its own methods for dealing with oxidation. Without me going much further down that bunny hole, Jesus, I guess I will have to let you come on board.
Oh, that's too bad that you have to do that. You are doing such a great job. And then I'm going to start spamming the broadcast. Let's talk about homocysteine. But first, I do need to share this real quick. Let me see if I can get the right screen. Perfect. So we have a new product. Dr. Brewer was discussing, hey, a lot of people don't know they have a problem. So you might as well find out. We have a product that will allow you to evaluate your own metabolic health risk at home. We'll talk about that later on the show. So Dr. Brewer, can you just confirm? So what's homocysteine? What are we talking about here?
Well, before I do have to make one more plug. And again, we'll talk about it a little bit later. And if you'd like to hear more about it, please let us know in the comments. One of the things that is a big problem for us is the cost for seeing us. There's only like one of me. We've got a few NPs that work with me that we've trained. But again, it's pretty cost prohibitive for a lot of folks. And one of the things we're wanting to do is figure out, we've been spending a lot of time figuring out how we can expand access for folks. This metabolic evaluation is a key component of that. And I'll just tell you this too. We're also even doing a digital AI twin. And there are places where, so I've been training that over the past few weeks, and there are places where that digital twin knows more than I do and can answer. Obviously, you know my verbal skills aren't the greatest. It can answer quicker and better. It's not ready for prime time yet, though. So we're working on that as well. So if you have more questions about that, let us know. So homocysteine is it's a biomarker. It's something that we look for, and it's a lab test. Jesus, I'm probably not going where you're wanting to go. Where are you wanting to go in terms of what it is?
Just say it's an amino acid.
Okay. Yeah, it's an amino acid. And you can tell that by looking at an amino acid has a carbon background. And that's what these two things mean. I don't know if you can see my my cursor, my arrow. But then when you have that NH3, that is an amine, what we call an amine. The fact that you've got an O2 over here indicates that it's an acid. So it's an amino acid with a sulfhydryl group. That's a sulfur and a hydrogen. So that's our lesson for organics today, unless you're wanting to go deeper.
No, that's fantastic. How's that for a chemistry class? So amino acids build proteins. So they do that. But also homocysteine is a special amino acid because it has been linked to multiple problems, specifically heart disease. Similar to other biomarkers, it is not clear if high homocysteine is actually a cause of cardiovascular disease. It seems to be more like an indicator of something's going wrong. So in this study that I'm showing right here, they identified that people who had high homocysteine had 66 to 68% increased cardiovascular mortality risk and 93% increased all-cause mortality. So what do you think high homocysteine is connected to such a big number in regards to death?
So that's a great point. I'm going to plop. We're not ready to get into Q&A yet, but Robert Pinsky's bringing up one of those points as well. I've always had high homocysteine. I take a methylated B complex in TMG. We'll describe that a little bit later, and a couple of other things that you can take too. That's actually the core quote secret here that we'll be talking about. We usually talk about methylated B complex and TMG. We'll describe what that is later in the show. But we'll also talk about some new stuff that Jesus has found. Now, why is it increased cardiovascular mortality? So a lot of people would say, look, the vast majority, and it's true, when you begin to think metabolism and organic chemistry, and you think epidemiology, you think population-wide, you go back to the comment that I made that when you hear the term inflammation in the human body, think oxidation. Here's the problem. We all know that undiagnosed prediabetes, diabetes, and if you're new to the channel, just a real quick couple of numbers. But in the last NHANES, National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, it's part of the U.S. Census, we found that 18 and older, over half of us had measurable disease, pre-diabetes or full diabetes. That's at age 18. And it gets worse each year as we get older, because this is the classic disease of aging. It ends up causing high blood pressure. It causes, as I mentioned before, high blood pressure, kidney disease, kidney failure, blindness. It causes elevation of problems with our lipids, our quote cholesterol. We're not going to get too deep into the cholesterol conundrum today because there's, again, another set of boogeymen that, unfortunately, most doctors are following when they should be following something else. Back to the real statistics. So out of those 52%, there's another way of looking at that. 52% have measurable disease. What people actually are healthy from metabolically healthy, it's only 8 to 12%. So when you begin to realize that 90% of us are not metabolically healthy, then you begin to get an understanding that of what's killing us. And it manifests itself, like I said, in many, many different ways. Doctors have specialized in brains, eyes, blood pressure, hearts. Nobody really specializes in looking at the common denominator to all these diseases, and that is the metabolism. So when you have a problem like high homocysteine, that's indicating people that have high homocysteine are not cleaning up their oxidation. And there's two sides to this. One is cleaning up oxidation, which I just mentioned in the comment. from Robert Pinsky. He's talking about cleaning it up using methylated B complex, using trimethylglycine. One of the key things is preventing that oxidation in the first place. And that's where lifestyle comes in. Keeping your weight down, minimizing body fat, maximizing muscle. So, Jesus, I sort of just let myself go down a whole bunch of bunny holes here. Bottom line is most of us have metabolic disease. Metabolic disease causes oxidation. Some of us, like Robert Pinsky, like me, don't have the correct genetics to clean up after that oxidation. So again, there's two parts: preventing oxidation, which is hard to do when you're, you know, in your 60s or 70s and you have maybe even full-blown diabetes, but it's still something that we need to work on. In addition, let's work on cleaning up that oxidation when it happens. And that's where this high homocysteine indicator comes in. It's showing us that you've got oxidation and you're struggling. Your body's struggling to clean it up.
Oh, man. Talking about being all over the place. Remember I told you before the show, people are saying we're all over the place. We need to be more organized. And then you just jump into a labyrinth of multiple things, which I appreciate because you're telling the answer right away, like how to deal with this problem. But I was just trying to set up what the problem is to begin with.
Well, maybe you better set that up because as I told you, this might not be the right channel if you're number one, not wanting to get geeky, and number two, not wanting to go down a few bunny holes.
And people, this is how Dr. Brewer behaves when he gets irritated. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dr. Brewer. And I just forget to mention, you were right. Like metabolic disease causes all sort of problems, including poor PP function, erectile dysfunction. So, the optimal value, just like you said, 10 or less. Optimal would be 8 or less. So that's the target. But we don't want you to just be chasing a number. It's not about chasing a number. It's about identifying this indicator and doing something to manage it. That's the thing. So you mentioned already, like genetic predisposition. Genetic predisposition usually behaves on the way of MTHFR gene. Some people call it the MTHFR gene. Pronounce it as you wish. Can you pronounce the big letters? I cannot. But even if I get blessed by the heavens, I cannot pronounce that.
What, methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase?
Correct. So that enzyme is the one that's supposed to help get rid of homocysteine, excess homocysteine, and transform that into other byproducts that can be actually used. Some people have a genetic deficiency of this enzyme, so they cannot metabolize homocysteine properly, right? And this is sure. just...
And this back is just, to Robert's comment. Robert even knows the specific. There are three that humans have some significant genetic variation in, and he's mentioning a couple of them right there. C677T, A1298C. I can't remember the name of the other one. Maybe somebody can help us with that. But those of us who have like two poor genes in those, or two quote disease genes in that pool, don't methylate as well. And so I used to work at a human genetics lab, so I was able to get mine done for free. But I don't recommend people run around trying to find the actual genetic testing for this. Because at the end of the day, you have high homocysteine. There's a couple of things that you know you need to do. And I'm sure Jesus will get to that.
Not really. I wasn't going to go that deep. So this is a point for the bunny hole.
Okay. Well, I've already mentioned it. One is cleaning up. And Robert's already mentioning ways to clean up. Get those methyl groups in there, methylated B complex and trimethylglycine. We can go a little bit deeper into those later, but that's the cleanup phase. But as I mentioned before, the best thing is to prevent the oxidation altogether. Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite food that you like to hate on, Jesus?
Favorite fruit that I like to hate on? I hate avocados, but I know they're healthy and I eat them all the time. But I don't know if you're thinking about another
cereal. Food. You hate cereal. And I was just
oh, yeah.
One of the worst ways of increasing your oxidation, whether you have diabetes or not, is eating breakfast cereal. So all these things about preventing it in the first place gets back to all of those things that we talk about. Decreasing highly processed carbohydrates like cereal. That's the worst one. Baked goods. I used to eat bread all the time when I was young until I found out I had prediabetes. Pastas, all of those things are a big deal. And you see the carnivore community, the one of the major reasons that carnivore is so popular is that it's an easy way, a very easy and simple way to just cut those glycemic carbs, those carbs out of your diet. They're going to raise your blood sugar.
Yep. And the other part is we usually don't recommend you getting the genetic testing. Like, you can get it if you want, but usually if you have high homocysteine, we want to look for how to fix it. And we always assume that there will be a genetic factor involved. But if you want to just know the detail on which one it's affected, yes, you can go ahead and get it done. You already explained a little bit about oxidation and reduction. Just remember, whenever we talk about oxidation, what happens is that particle, that atom is losing electrons. And when one atom loses electrons, another one is going to gain them. So that other one gets reduced. And it's just kind of the balance that has to be on biochemistry within your own metabolism. This is happening all the time, multiple places. And just some substances are more, tend to be oxidized and tend to create more problems than others. So this is kind of a quick refresher. And this one over here is a little bit more complex, but it comes to show how that same process works when you are involving homocysteine. So I want you to take a look at those two players over here. You have 5-methyltetrahydrofolate. So we have folates involved, vitamin B9. Then in the middle, you have vitamin B12. Then you have zinc that is involved. And you called, there's right there something called the folate trap, which is basically where you are able to metabolize that homocysteine so it can get turned into methionine and it gets reduced. That folate trap is usually where problems arise. And one of the major components, or one of the most popular components that you will see that is causing high homocysteine, is actually a deficiency on B12, B12, B9, and vitamin B6 as well. Do you want to add something on this?
If you don't mind, yeah. So first of all, I thought I got geeky on my bunny holes. I didn't get into electron borrowing. That's pretty deep. And this is deep too, but you bring up a couple of points. Homocysteine, you see on the left of the large circle on the bottom, and methionine on the right. Both of those are what we call, as Jesus mentioned earlier, amino acids that have a sulfhydryl group, that hydrated sulfur group on it. Basically, what our body is doing is using these things to decrease having too many electron groups, which is leading to unstable, oxidized proteins, amino acids, things like that.
Yeah.
Pickwickian syndrome and a couple of others are bringing up really good points. I keep giving people these things. The methylated B complex, but it's not lowering their homocysteine. In short, I'll say this. I don't think the goal, and I've seen that many times with my patients as well. They say, "Well, I took it, and it really didn't lower the homocysteine." Well, I don't think that's the goal. I think the goal is to have your body having those methyl groups available. The only way you're going to lower the homocysteine is lowering the inflammatory processes in the beginning. So we can talk a little bit later about that as well.
Yeah, and just a quick remark on methionine. I said methionine and you said methionine. So I guess that's the correct one. So yeah. Methionine, a big source of methionine is actually red meat or meat overall. And when I doing when I was doing research on this, I found some articles here and there saying, well, if you have a meat-rich diet, you have a lot of methionine, and that high methionine is going to create more homocysteine. But the evidence is still conflicting. When researching on PubMed, I saw a couple articles where they tested methionine-rich diets. Turns out they didn't necessarily increase homocysteine levels just because methionine can be also metabolized in other pathways. So there is a balance, and it's not clear. It's not white, black and white. I won't be surprised that there are people who have a methionine-rich diet on which their metabolism actually might predispose them to have high methionine levels, high homocysteine, more inflammation. But I don't think that's just an universal truth for everyone. So I just wanted to point that out. Not saying every time you eat a lot of methionine, that means you're going to have a lot of homocysteine. I don't think that's the case. There are mechanisms to balance all of this.
You're not saying it depends.
I didn't want you to go there. Like, like months ago, I was like, well, why can't you just take a stand and say yes or no? And this is harmful. This is not harmful. And then just experience. It's just your experience. And you're right. It always depends. So, yeah.
Context is everything. I'm reading a great book on that.
Yeah. You're always reading books.
Not going to go there.
Yeah. Okay, so this is just another image closely to this, the way of this is being metabolized. On top, you see on one side, and I'm putting it on my other screen because I don't have my glasses, N-methyl tetrahydrofolate being transformed into tetrahydrofolate. And for that to happen, it requires vitamin B12, which is going to be methylated. So this methyl group that helps reduce this chemical process is actually obtained from this N5-methyl tetrahydrofolate. So you get the methyl group from that. This N5-methyl tetrahydrofolate gets converted to tetrahydrofolate, and then you have that methyl group in the B12 vitamin that can now be transported and can be attached to homocysteine. That way, homocysteine can be converted back to methionine, and you don't have like that high level of homocysteine. But what happens if you don't have enough vitamin B12? If you don't have enough vitamin B12, what happens is this methyl group doesn't have where to attach, some place to be attached. So you end up with a lot of N5-methyl tetrahydrofolate that you cannot use the methyl group from, and a lot of homocysteine around in your bloodstream, and low tetrahydrofolate as well. And this is the enzyme, the tetrahydrofolate reductase, that does that, that is basically impairing all of this and causing this high level of homocysteine. Now I need a translation for all of that.
I'm going to try to translate, but good luck to all of us on that. I love this slide, though, because it shows the essence of what we're talking about. You know, the homocysteine on the right is an oxidized form. The methionine on the left is the reduced form. It's more neutral. It's showing that the body is able to manage that oxidation and neutralize that. So that's where we want to be. And it also shows that the difference between those two is just that methyl group, that little red thing right there, the CH3. For those of you that that missed it, it's you're taking that methyl off of the methylated vitamin B. You're the enzyme that's creating this circular pathway is taking that methyl group off of the vitamin B12 and attaching it to the sulfur part of this homocysteine, replacing the hydrogen with a sulfur and forming the methionine, which is where we want. It's the less oxidized, less inflammatory component.
Wonderful. Now, what happens with high homocysteine? What's the fate of homocysteine? So one is what we just mentioned, the folate-dependent pathway. Turns into methionine. And there's another way that you can get rid of homocysteine, and that's by the betaine-dependent pathway, which it gets processed by the liver or gets excreted in the urine, in the kidney.
And that's what Robert Pinsky mentioned a few minutes ago. TMG, trimethylglycine. That's also known as betaine.
And the other part is another way that homocysteine is very much linked to heart disease is that people that have heart failure or in which ejection fraction, the amount of blood that your heart is pumping out, is not enough to provide enough blood to your kidney. Lower blood flow to the kidney decreases kidney function. And by decreasing kidney function, you cannot eliminate enough of these toxins, including homocysteine. And then homocysteine goes high because of heart failure indirectly. So that's something that can also happen. Of course, drinking alcohol, impairing your liver function, that's also going to be causing problems with homocysteine elimination. There's another pathway that homocysteine can follow in which homocysteine is not converted into methionine, but converted into cysteine. And for that to happen, you need vitamin B6. Then cysteine can be used to produce glutathione. And glutathione is a powerful antioxidant just because of that. If you increase glutathione, you can also create more cysteine, or you can create more tools in order to get that homocysteine converted into cysteine down the road. So you come to the point of you have an oxidation problem, antioxidants in paper, they should be helpful.
Now, are you going to mention N-acetylcysteine and GlyNAc?
Yes, and just because N-acetylcysteine can help produce glutathione as well. So that's the way it works. And GlyNAc is one of those brand names of supplements, which we usually are very critical about researching supplements. GlyNAc, despite the GlyNAc doesn't have that much papers on their history, they have a couple of good papers that were done by, what was that, Baylor School of Medicine, I believe? And mm-hmm. they showed that they have significant benefits on people over 60 years old. And it has to do with all this process, homocysteine being one of those factors as well. But before we go to supplementation and the doses and how to manage it, so I wanted to just give a quick shout out to our sponsor today, us and Dr. Brewer's Investments. And we were able to come up with a metabolic risk assessment that you can do at home. So this kit, if you ask for it, it has a grip strength measurement tool, which grip strength has been associated very closely with cardiovascular risk. The stronger your muscles, it's not so much about your arm, but it's just a way you measure that. The stronger your muscles, the more you're going to live. A home test for the kits you need for a home at home oral glucose tolerance test. But ways to measure and analyze your body fat, instructions and access to a portal and an advisor to help you out through the process. We have a debut price of $169.50. And if you buy additional kits for the rest of your family, it's $119.99. And we have a link on the description of this video if you want to go ahead and check it out. You wanted to mention something additional to this, Dr. Brewer, before we go to the doses.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, when you start looking at the hardware that's included in there, it's pushing the price tag anyway. But then it goes way over because then you get a state-of-the-art health coach to go over over all of your information. Your family history is included in it. Grips, some basic grip strength information, some body fat estimates, and again you go pretty deep just getting started on just how much of a metabolic problem do I have, and that's exciting.
So, what to do about high homocysteine? We discussed supplementation, and I'm leaving the best intervention to the end. But this is just kind of how you can help your metabolism to deal with homocysteine. Since this is a methylation problem and we acknowledge that you need methyl groups and you need vitamin B12, one of the recommendations is taking methylated B-complex, just not any traditional B-complex, but methylated B-complex, 1 milligram a day. That's usually a good way to start. The other alternative is taking betaine. Research says 1 to 6 grams a day. So you can also move that homocysteine into the beta independent pathway. So it gets eliminated by the liver or kidneys. And you can take both if you want. And the other option is N-acetylcysteine. It can be alone or combined with lysine, like Linac. The research says 1.8 to 3 grams a day. You found a good article about N-acetylcysteine, didn't you, Dr. Brewer?
Yeah, it was making a point that N-acetylcysteine, it was just a couple of randomized clinical trials, you know, which is one of the best forms of evidence. Basically, people that were taking N-acetylcysteine, whether they had evidence of significant metabolic disease or not. So people that and the indicator that they used was the lipids, the cholesterol values, and whether they were good or bad. N-acetylcysteine in both groups improved blood pressure and decreased other signs of disease. So I think, again, fairly strong evidence that N-acetylcysteine helps.
Yep.
And of course, that's not a surprise. And what you mentioned a few minutes ago, Glynac, which includes N-acetylcysteine, has got some great first numbers coming out.
And the best intervention that I could find on the research was actually drum roll, exercise. Ah. Believe it or not, exercise shown that even small physical activity has an impact on decreasing homocysteine. Who would have guessed that? So being active,
I would have.
So that's absolutely necessary. So. Of course, you're still going to have a subgroup of people who will be very active and still have this problem. That's when supplements come in. But if you're not doing exercise and you are relying on a pill to reduce this risk, you probably are doing it backwards.
You know, I found myself in this show and so many times going back and trying to deal with this. The influencers out there, in both in the low carb community and in other places, you'll hear them talk about don't worry about supplements. They don't make a difference. And you know, you've heard me say it a gazillion times, but you know, that's part of your job. So you gotta listen to me. But even though you don't, there's no way you can out supplement a diet problem or an exercise problem. But to say, okay, then totally neglect supplements when the evidence indicates that they help, that's kind of dumb. I exercise and work on my diet all the time. But that doesn't mean that I don't take supplements. I take the stuff that we're talking about here.
Yep. You even gave it a shot on Fatty 15. Was it Fatty 15?
Yeah, I tried Fatty 15.
I told you, you might not need that. You still spend hundreds of bucks on that thing.
Well, no, I'm not still spending hundreds of bucks. I'm not buying Fatty 15 anymore. I'm just eating pecorino cheese and sour cream.
Yeah. So you and I, we both have selective hearing. So you cannot blame me for that.
Not at all.
Oh, come on.
Well, hey, Sue, I got to start off with a couple of member comments.
Are you
going to read that for us?
Love the bunny holes. Well, people, we love you and we appreciate you watching the channel. Let me give you a stat, just a stat. I believe it's like 8% of our audience that watches both our videos from Saturday and the lives, and about 2% of people who watches only the live shows. So about 2% of people might love the bunny holes, and maybe you are here, 2%. We appreciate you. We love you. But remember, we're trying to spread the word because there's millions of people out there that have no idea what this is about. So what we're trying to do is to make it a little bit more simple, even though today we just geek out totally.
Yeah. We get between 2.5 and 5 million views in a month. And the vast majority of them are those long form pre-recordeds.
Yep.
which is more than eighth grade level.
Maybe people. Well, yeah, that's true. That's for sure. And there's no banter. I'm not around on those, and maybe that's why as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it's because I've been telling you that from day one. It's because you're not there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, but somebody has to keep you in check. So
you went geeky today, didn't you?
Well, and I loved it. Let's see members' questions first. That's another point. We would love to be able to answer every question, but we just there's just so much time. So the way we are managing that is become a channel member. So if you become a channel member, we can put a link below or just add a small banner there for you know where to click. It's a couple of bucks a month. That way we can just see who is a member and answer those questions first. Additionally, we have exclusive videos every Wednesday for members only. Even if Dr. Brewer is too busy seeing patients, I found a way for him to record that for you guys.
By the way, if I could interrupt, Gilbert, could you show the other banner that tells folks how to become patients? Because I saw somebody a little bit later on asking how to do that.
Yeah.
There you go. Go ahead.
Scan the QR code, visit PredMedHealth.com or call 859-721-1414. All right. So, Brad, good morning. Regarding soft plaque, what are the best test methods to determine how much soft plaque a person has? That's a great question. We have a full video about it, though, Brad, but we'll be happy to answer that question. When I start, Dr. Brewer, first?
That sounds like the royal we, Jesus.
Well, please, just whatever answer you give, at the end, you should say, I was right.
That Jesus was right?
Yeah, you know why?
Yeah, why?
Well, the best test to identify soft plaque in your heart. I was right.
Well, can I spoil the beans in terms of what the video says the best test is?
Yeah.
The best test is also by far the most expensive. It's a CT angiogram with a AI, or clearly it's the major group in that space. And you get really good information on it. The question is, on a practical basis, I've been dragging my feet, and that's part of what Jesus is laughing about. He's in the younger crowd, and they came in wanting to use high technology. I have been using a much lower, much less expensive technology called CIMT forever. Then there's another one looking at, quote, plaque, end quote. That's the calcium score. It's easy. You can find it on any corner. Almost all of us live within 10 to 15 minutes of an x-ray department that'll get that. But Brad brought up a key point regarding soft plaque. It only shows calcium. So we see, and Brad's right, the calcium, you know, the Honda study made it really, really clear. Calcified plaque is stable. It's about as stable as having no plaque at all. So we don't really want to know it's not so important to know where calcium is. It's important to know where soft plaque is. And we have seen people, you know, somebody who's basically metabolically out of control having significant soft plaque. You know, I'm going to go back and say, na-na-na-na, I told you so. It was about 4 years ago. You know, we've always said you really don't need statins if you don't have plaque. And sure enough, it was about 4 years ago, the Standards Committee for the American Heart Association said, if you have a negative calcium score, you don't need a statin, no matter what your LDL is. Well, they sort of made progress in terms of going there on statin indications. You need plaque, but they whiffed it in terms of this point. People can have soft plaque and no calcification. And sure enough, we've done a presentation on it. I did it pre-Jesus, and we'd have to go back. That was before you brought in and got all these views, so we'd have to go way back into the past to find it. But
before the clickbait era.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, but fortunately, we do provide substance, which is why that's why it's not clickbait. Anyhow.
It's true. It's clickable instead of clickbait.
Yep.
So the comparison, once you want to know soft plaque, you got CIMT. No radiation, only a couple of $100. I've seen them as low as 100 and as high as 400. But the problem with CIMT is there's two problems, garbage in, garbage out. So if you get a poor technique on the CIMT, you'll see some things in there that are not may not be exactly right in terms of the amount of plaque. But it's unfortunate that leads to groups like the standards committee saying, okay, well, we don't want to use CIMT, so nobody does it. At the end of the day, it's not really the amount of plaque that you want to look for on CIMT anyway. You want to look for calcification. And that Honda study that I mentioned a few minutes ago makes it really clear. That is not subjective. Calcification on a CIMT is very, very objective. You know, they actually used optical character recognition to show it. So it's unfortunate, but it's reality. Now, so the final option is a couple of thousand, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 for a CT angiogram, and then a couple of $1,000s to get an AI analysis.
Yep, that's for sure. And if you have younger family members, people on their 20s or 30s, you might want to ask them to start testing for this. I got my first CIMT a year ago. Fortunately, after I did some important lifestyle changes, I have shared in the channel before, I was overweight. I have pre-diabetes. My CIMT cleaner, like the 20-year-old, got a calcium score a couple of weeks ago, 0. So the chances for me to have soft plaque are minimum, and I want to keep it that way. It's easier to start younger because when you start at your 40s, 50s, 60s, you're very likely to have a handicap against you. So share this to young people as well. They might not understand it right now, but it's important. Richard Militello, good morning. Good morning to Drifting Life. Thank you for sharing practice time and knowledge. Thank you for watching. We could be talking here all day, every day, but if nobody's watching, how's that saying that if a tree falls
in the forest, nobody's there?
Yeah, exactly right. Whoops, got distracted right late. That's okay, Joe. You can always watch the replay. Love the bunny holes. Well, it's a loving bunny holes trend right here. I love all your geeky and bunny holes.
There you go, Jan.
Good way to boost Dr. Brewer self-esteem.
And I need it. I'm getting beat up.
Yo, it's good for your what do you call that? Your imposter syndrome.
That's right.
Sorry if you talked about this before. I go here. How important is the D-dimer blood test? It seems expensive. I personally, like, this is my perspective. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Brewer. Okay. I don't really see the use of D-dimer unless you have symptoms like chest pain, breathing difficulties, stuff like that, that could signal that you're dealing with pulmonary embolism, an infarctation of your lungs. Other than that, I personally haven't seen evidence on D-dimer being good for preventive strategies, but I don't know. What do you think, Dr. Brewer?
Yeah, it's more of an emergency department kind of test where you're looking for those of you who are not familiar with it, D-dimer actually looks at fibrinolysis. Pardon the $20 term. Fibrin breakdown. And fibrin breakdown is going to be happening when you've got clots that you might not want to have around, like a heart or a clot in your veins of your leg or lungs. Mm-hmm. So that's more of trying to figure out what's going on with somebody that's got a big problem than it is in terms of prevention like we're doing.
Yep. Tree lady, is overventilation real? I'm supposed to beware of this due to my homozygous COMT gene. I haven't seen that being a problem, but what do you think, Dr. Brewer?
I'm not familiar with the terminology, the label COMT gene. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, well, this is not a common thing. to start with. It's called catechol-O-methyltransferase gene provides instructions to making an enzyme that helps break down dopamine and other neurotransmitters in the brain.
Well, it's a methyltransferase, so I wouldn't be surprised. I just haven't worked with that.
This seems to be like more specific. We'll have to take a look on the research regarding that.
But I will say hello, tree lady. Good to see you again.
Oh, yeah.
Or hear from you.
Joe SXM, how does the OGT test in the kit work?
What are you looking at me for, Jesus?
You developed the thing.
So this is not the first time people have done a home OGT test. So we've been doing home OGTT. Well, gosh, I can't remember the name of the group. We've been doing them for at least 5 or 6 years. And with most home OGTTs, they send you a bottle of the glucose solution. We actually send you a powder form, which is purer and actually tastes a little better. So it works the way any other OGTT test would work. What you do is you fast for at least 8 hours, preferably 12. Then you get a fasting glucose test, and then you take the 7,500 grams, depending on which you're using, of glucose. And usually you mix it in. In this one, you mix the powder in the water. Then you do a test. Now, what Joe may be referring to is, do we do like a blood spot? Meridian Labs, I think that was the name of it. One of the labs that used to do a lot of these did a blood spot test. I'm Aware is another group that did these in the past. They used a blood spot test. This is using the finger stick glucometer. So again, this is not like a reference lab level test. And the big thing that it really doesn't include is insulin response. But what we're trying to do is get a practical, reliable, something you can do at home so you can start getting some understanding of your level of metabolism without going through the effort of going into a Quest lab or a LabCorp for a day or a half day and spending many hundreds of dollars on getting lab tests done.
Yep. So thank you, Dr. Brewer. What's your opinion on what about CT angiogram with heart flow? Do you know about that one?
Have you?
It's the one that has the fractional flow reserve analysis, and they use some technology for that. I don't remember seeing a patient doing it. We don't necessarily recommend it that much. It's better than a traditional CT angiogram. But to the top of my head, I don't remember if I have seen a report and if they assess soft plaque.
Yeah, and once you start looking at FF, fractional flow reserve, you begin to start asking some of the questions about, okay, theoretically, it's how much flow reserve you have beyond the impingement or the plumbing problem. At the end of the day, fractional flow reserve is thinking about plumbing again. And well, it's not the plumbing issue here. I mean, people come to me all the time in a mad panic saying, but my doctor says I have only I have 98% blockage. It's an emergency. I've got to get it done. And so that begs a couple of questions. The first one being, well, you evidently didn't see it as an emergency because you didn't do it and you're here talking to us. But the bigger question and the question that I always ask is, okay, well, do you run or do you do high intensity interval? Well, and most of the time the answer is yes. And so do you have chest pain when that happens? Most of the time the answer is no. So then you start opening the kimono a little bit and saying, maybe that's not 98% blockage because I wouldn't be able to be doing HIIT training if it were. These days, so many folks are coming to us after having seen a lot of the channel. Most folks really aren't surprised about that now. They're upset. They're concerned. I understand that. But they're not so surprised when we go down that bunny hole or that is, go down that that path, because that's what they were thinking when they said, yeah, you may see it as a as an emergency doctor, interventional cardiologist. But I'm not so sure I agree.
Wonderful. This is a really good question, the one that's coming next. Howie, I have had high homocysteine even though I exercise daily and on keto. After taking methylfolate optimizer, my homocysteine became optimal. Congratulations. My question is, what to do with a high fibrinogen anti-gene?
Not familiar with that either. Are you?
Not with the anti-gene, but if you're having high fibrinogen levels, there's, of course, lifestyle. It seems like you're doing that already. I hate to talk about medications, but medications like fibrates or cyclopidine might reduce that, and another a bunch of others. Folate, vitamin B9 has been associated with that. But I think this is a great high fibrinogen. It's a great, great topic to cover on another live show, I think.
Yeah, we may want to do that.
Yeah. All right, let me see. Howie, even though I have a calcium score of over 3,000, my CIMT showed no soft plaque, and my R3H 10 years below my chronological age. Congratulations, Howie. Mm-hmm. I think the question is, should I be concerned?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that you developed all that plaque, Howie, but you are not the only one. We routinely, it's one of the more common reasons for coming to see us. Somebody who found out about calcium score, went to get one and had one 1,000, 2,000, and like you, 3,000, and even a couple of them over 4,000. And yes, overall risk is higher with higher levels of calcification somewhat. But as Jesus has pointed out many times before, quite often the folks with these higher numbers, when you actually start looking at them, are folks that had significant metabolic disease prior and therefore a whole lot of soft plaque. But then they discovered that and they dealt with it. And so it's usually the people that don't have these really, really high numbers that are a little bit higher risk because they don't know that they've got soft plaque.
Yeah. And I will say also, there is still a small percentage of people, we have seen that in our practice, high calcium score, clean CIMT, and then they get the CT angiogram, which clearly turns out they have some soft plaque, but it's usually minimum. So there's that possibility as well. So there are people who will say, you know what, I don't want to know. Like, I'm doing the lifestyle changes I need to do. I'm confident on that. I won't spend more money on it. I won't go to the cat lab to get dye and all that stuff. So I'll rather just keep going. Some people will say, well, I don't want to live with the doubt in my mind that I might have some soft plaque. I want to know. I'll go to get that test. So it depends. I hate to say that.
Oh, it depends. There you go.
Man.
We're going to have to, we need to find out what timestamp that was at.
You got me. Yo, SXM, let's drift away. Do you have a lance finger, like finger stick, and send to a lab? Does it do insulin too? So the home test is with a finger stick. We try doing the glucose monitor. But the problem is the glucose monitor is not as accurate immediately. It's more for patterns. And it was going to turn the kit very expensive. Like, the point is not just, it's not about making profit. It's about giving you the information. So we had to use finger sticks.
And does it have insulin? And the answer is nobody's got good home insulin testing. I mean, again, if you're going to get insulin, you have to start using what we call that blood spot, where you get the lab paper and you stick your finger and you drop blood on it. And again, we tried that in the past with I'm Aware. It wasn't that popular.
Yes. And you don't have to take that to the lab anyway, either. Howie, my heart flow CTA didn't show plaque levels and the cardiologist reading. It wanted me to go to the cath lab immediately. Not helpful. But still got good indication of narrowing of my plaque.
Yeah, so we're not worried about too much about the narrowing more than the type of plaque. So if it's soft plaque, it has more chances to rupture, and that's the problem. Narrowing, reduced blood flow because of stable plaque, calcified plaque that is obstructing blood flow can be a problem when you're having chest pain, a gyna that doesn't allow you to exercise. In those cases, some people rather try to get a stent, go to the cath lab, get a stent, which is a fairly safe procedure. And if that improves your exercise capacity, that's fine. But we don't want people just to think that just because they have a stent, they are off the hook. That's the problem. Did I summarize your teachings correctly?
You know what? I'm not going to, I hate to say it, but I didn't hear that last part. I was looking at comments.
You're selective hearing. That's what I said. Jim Pritchard just became a member. Right. Thank you so much, Jim. Did you send a question, Jim? We need to finish this. So let me see. If you didn't send a question, we can save for later. But that's all the questions we are going to be able to answer. We're hitting the 1 hour mark. Thank you so much for joining us today. This Saturday, we're dropping a video about how to diagnose metabolic disease and diabetes. That's going to be juicy. Very good video. Dr. Brewer really outdid himself on that one. And we'll be looking forward to see you next week. Any closing remarks?
You're dropping it? Should we pick it up?
Come on.
I'm using that new cool language. It dropped.
That's what you two cool YouTubers say.
I know. Dropped a video. Right. You're starting to sound like Nick Norwitz.
Anyhow, buy the kit if you want to know your metabolic health. Link on the description and I think on the pinned comment.
And even better yet, buy the kit for somebody. Most of the folks that are listening to us are pretty good on where their metabolic health is, but it's your family members.
Yep. And sorry for the shameless plug. We'll see you next week.
I'm not. Okay.
We hope you found today's episode informative and useful. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on all our latest episodes. For more information about becoming a patient or participating in our exclusive events, visit PrevMedHealth.com or call 859-721-1414.